And to move into open public input. I'm going to call you folks up three at a time. There's three chairs, two mics. We'll make it work. And you each have 3 minutes, as you know. Tammy will have the buzzer go off after your 3 minutes. At that point, please wrap up your second sentence because we have a significant stack of folks here, and we'll move on. And in advance, thank you all for coming. First one, Jim Sutton, Steve Shane Weiss, Ross Barkhurst.
Can we ask them to use their mics?
Oh, yeah. Please get the mic squared away. There's another one on the other end there. Jim Sutton, please.
Hi. Good morning, Commissioners. Director Sussman and the Commission. I am Jim Sutton, and I am the past president of the Inland Northwest Wildlife Council, and I'm here to speak on their behalf. The Spokane visit that you all endured sounded like a good time, and we were not there, so our apologies, but we kind of knew what was going to happen once you got there and didn't want to be a party to it. A lot has been said about Region 1 and not the Department of Fish and Wildlife not working with people and or groups across the state of Washington, and I am here to hopefully set that to rest. The Inland Northwest Wildlife Council works with Region 1 not only in legislative ways, so to speak, but also boots on the ground. We work with them very well, and they respond to us as well. The main reason for this visit, though, is to let you know that in the up-and-coming bear and cougar proposals, that we are currently working with Region 1, the staff, the BIOS, District 1, and some Olympia staff as well. To name a few, Steve Prezangra, Kevin Robinette, and Stephanie Simic. We are looking to give the ungulates on the east side a little bit of reprieve, and we'd like to see the predators managed as a whole as opposed to hopefully individual groups. We will be back here in August with our proposal, and that's going to come from the department's own numbers, graphs, and so on and so forth, and the reports from the BIOS. So, in fact, Ms. Kim here has even been to a couple of our workshops, and we are going to continue to have those at the council, so that way we can work with the Department of Fish and Wildlife and not throw a temper tantrum. So, with that being said, we will be back in August, I believe it is, when you're looking at the bear and cougar proposals. And although we don't agree with the department every single time, we will have our own set of proposals. And when we come back, we would like to have more than 3 minutes so we can explain those. Because I think it's beneficial for you to hear why we came up with what we came up with. The last item, if you will, on my agenda this morning is that I would certainly hope that the Department of Fish and Wildlife commissioners would come to Spokane or at least the Far East region of this state more than one time in the year. I think that that would show a little bit better faith in the department on the east side. We know there are a number of issues there. I'll finish it up, Tammy. We know there are a number of issues there, and we think more than one meeting would be beneficial. So thank you, and thanks for allowing us to work with you guys. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Jim. Any questions from the commission? None? Okay. Steve?
Mr. Chair, Director, Commissioners, my name is Steve Shane Wise. I reside in Olympia, Washington, and I am not here today to discuss corn ponds. I wish to instead address several issues regarding the Waterfowl Advisory Group, otherwise known as WAG. First, the acronym WAG means Wolf Advisory Group to many people in this state, not Waterfowl Advisory Group. I would suggest fixing this problem by somehow changing the acronyms so they don't match. Second, the Waterfowl Advisory Group is supposed to be a conduit between hunters and the Wildlife Commission and Department. Yet the ability of the general hunting public to contact and provide input to advisory group members is almost non-existent. You cannot obtain either phone numbers or emails of members, and the only central location to contact them is through Kyle Spragans, who will relay your thoughts, and then you just have to hope the WAG member will get back to you. There is not even an opportunity for public comment at WAG meetings. At the very least, WAG should have a web page or be on Facebook or Instagram or wherever anyone can provide input about issues that matter to them. The Waterfowl Advisory Group needs to move into the 21st century by adopting some form of social media connection with the general hunting public. Third, the current advisory group members include some people who are associated with either commercial or private hunting interests. These individuals need to be purged from the process. The Waterfowl Advisory Group should be a connection with people who hunt free public lands, not those who exploit the resource for commercial profit or paid private pleasure. Finally, although I wish to become a member of the Waterfowl Advisory Group, I truly believe the membership needs to shift towards younger people and especially include women. The members I saw at the meeting in Ellensburg back in 2017 were pretty much older white males who would qualify for Medicare. That's not a fair representation of the current demographic of our waterfowl hunting public in the state of Washington. Thank you.
Well, I see the director making notes over there, so I expect you heard the message, Kelly, and you can deal with it. All right, Mr. Barkhurst, Ross Barkhurst.
Yes, sir. Is this on? Okay. I'm the leader of a Willapa Basin ecosystem review team. We're hoping the other two can go in sequence with me. We sent you a report a few weeks ago of our analysis of the ecosystems in the Willapa Basin. And it ended with seven recommendations. We'd like to just briefly go over them today. I'm going to cover the first three. One is that we think you should receive regular briefings from senior management on the preparedness of our hatcheries to receive a fish and do the job. We've had some real problems in Willapa Bay. The three hatcheries killed almost as many Chinook as we harvested last year. And there are ways we can do better. And I hope you would get reports on that. The second one is it seems to be clear that our systems aren't in condition to support the biological life, plant and animal, that we've listed. The big thing going on now is the chemical removal of eelgrass. And the way the permit is written, it's indiscriminate. We shouldn't be removing any more eelgrass chemically until we can review the inventory of what we've got there, both species, and make a decision as to what it can support. Ask the commission to take the lead. This is one of the urgent ones because this current permit, five-year permit, is about to end. There will be some process to review it, and we would hope the department would be really involved in that, and not just the fish department, but also wildlife. The third one is our waterfowl are no longer supported in Willapa Basin as they were up until 2013. All that supports them, eelgrass and invertebrates, being the obvious ones, need inventory, and we need to know where we stand with that. Again, we would hope that the commission would take the lead in getting that done. We just can't indiscriminately remove habitat for 5 years and see what happens and not even measure it. Those are the three I was going to cover.
Thank you, Russ. Any questions? Thank you all. Next three, Marlissa Dugan, Tim Hamilton, and Bob Lake. Melissa, welcome.
Good morning, commissioners. Director, thank you for giving us an opportunity to speak today. I am also part of the Wiebert team. My history in the NEMA is long. My My grandfather homesteaded in the NEMA. I own 200 acres in the bay itself. I own property on the North NEMA River. I am a recreational fishing advocate as well, and my roots go deep there. I am aware of a lot of things that once were and some of the things that are happening now that are not so good. One of the topics that we did want to address as a whole as we were talking about the ecosystem is that the Willapa was once a vibrant nursery for juvenile sturgeon, and the sturgeon are pretty much gone. Their major food has been repeatedly sprayed and is under threat for more eradication, and this would be the burrowing sand shrimp that is under attack by the local oyster industry. A plan for recovery is needed, and regular reports from wildlife as well as fish departments working together is going to be essential for recovering sturgeon in that area. And talks with Chad and the department seem to be, oh, well, that's not on our radar. You know, we're not managing that. But it is supposed to be part of the species that are managed within the bay. And I'd like to see some work done on that. The other topic that within this 3 minutes is about the herring spawning mass. Again, the grasses in the bay have been seriously depleted. It is my understanding that there was once 400 tons of herring spawning mass in the bay, and we've been reduced to about 40 tons, so about one-tenth of what originally was. And it seems to me that both of these things are part of this gentle, self-balancing ecosystem. The burrowing sand shrimp's primary predator was the sturgeon in the area, and without that, they have gone crazy in the last few years. That combined with the spraying by the oyster industry, it's a roundabout. They spray the eelgrass, and the burrowing sand shrimp move in. The burrowing sand shrimp do not live where there's eelgrass, and so it comes back. And then they spray it again, and it's just a roundabout, ridiculous cycle. My grandfather, Ted Wilson, owned what is now a thriving oyster industry right there on the Niawakam. As a kid, I spent a lot of time out there harvesting oysters. Today, the oyster industry has expanded into areas there where the mud is soft, where there really wasn't optimal growth. They've made amendments to the mud out there to expand their industry, and this probably has a great deal of impact on their ability to maintain some of those beds and why they spray so often. And so these things definitely have affected the herring spawning capabilities out there. You know, the salmon eat the herring, the sturgeon eat the sand shrimp. Help us take a look with Fish and Wildlife as a bigger picture so that we can rebalance the Willapa as we move forward into our future. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak. Thank you all for volunteering your time.
Any questions? Okay. Mr. Hamilton.
Tim Hamilton. I'm from McClary, Washington. Lived in Grace Harbor my whole life. My dad was born on North River. So the Twin Harbors are something that are very important to us. What I want to talk about is how we could possibly help you, okay? The silo effect that goes on in fisheries management is ridiculous. It's counterproductive to growing fish. This department is not in the science business. It's in the farming business. It raises fish. But it doesn't know how many fish it can plant in a stream for them to have enough food to live on, to make it to the ocean. The bay, the fresh water, has a carrying capacity unbeknownst to the department. You can instruct the department to release 3 million more Chinook, and guess what? If there's no room to feed but 1.5 million, they die. Okay? We have a dramatic decrease in the productions of these streams and bays. And when you get into the bay, which is the middle of the life cycle of the fish, remember, it's like a child. If you starve it in grade school, it dies. You starve it in high school, the bay, it dies. You starve it on the ocean, adulthood, it dies. You have to follow the life cycle. And this marine bay has indicators, ducks, brants, The salmon smolts go into the eelgrass and eat all these little crustacean things, and that's where they hide and where they grow and where they eat. We have to take into consideration all of the factors in that life cycle if we're going to succeed in getting the fish back. And they don't. Now, we can. Believe it or not, we can. We have all these people with experience, titles, PhDs, and everything else standing by. We can go do this. We can deliver you a plan on recovery in Wallapa Bay. It won't cost you a dime. I guarantee it. But we have to have your interest. You know how long it takes four people to agree to a 9-page letter? We're talking hours and hours and hours and hours. We'll do it. But you guys need to tell us whether you're interested. If you're not interested, then it's not fair to put us through this. If you are interested in it, we're ready to serve you. I thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Commissioner Thorburn. Tim, hang on a minute. Did you have a question for Tim?
It's not a question. It's an observation about the three testimonies that we just heard. It's something that I've been feeling for a long time, learning about this estuary in my time on the commission. And I go back to a briefing that we received actually by folks from more than just our agency on, I think, the permitting for the spraying and how that's done. And what I think about that still a lot, because we've invested a lot in the Willapa Bay salmon management policy and trying to recover fish, as has been pointed out to us, native or our natural origin fish, in a system that has over a century of major alteration by human activity. And what struck me in that briefing is what we kind of heard today. We're only working with a portion of it, this silo thing maybe that you referred to, Tim, in trying to recover the fish. What I recall we used for monitoring health was a shorebird count. We didn't even have a baseline on what shorebirds used to be there. I just am concerned that we're not taking that holistic approach that to recovery of a habitat, of an estuary that's been massively altered, we're only trying to work on a piece of it. And I think probably it's a resource problem, issue for the department in terms of how many resources can we pour into this recovery. But I have to say, as I listen to you, I shared those concerns that we're not taking a holistic approach to the recovery of this estuary.
Thank you, Commissioner Baker.
I couldn't agree more with Commissioner Thorburn on this. As somebody who is coming in and trying to look at things holistically, we are presented with decisions that are very narrow, and the results of our decisions, and we will probably have one later today, instead of being used as ways to do what we're supposed to do, which is support wildlife and estuaries like this, they're more used as sort of combat results, saying, oh, look, the commission agrees with us, or oh, look, the commission agrees with us. So I'd like to say that either today or at least for the next year, we start looking at things more holistically with this bay. We cannot just be judged, and we will not get to recovery if we don't start taking a broader look. Thank you.
I feel real strongly that we need to try and figure out a way to look at the big picture, which is the entire food chain that supports these important species that we're trying to recover. And I think we're missing the boat. And I don't know if it's anybody's fault at all, not blaming anybody, but I feel strongly that the commission needs to get engaged in that. And I appreciate what you folks are doing and what you brought to us today. And I look forward to hearing more. I did have a brief discussion with Chad up in Linwood earlier this week about some of the Willapaw issues, just some of the environmental issues, ecosystem issues, and I don't give him his daily job task, Ron does, but he had some intel on it, and he seemed interested in talking about it, and that'll be up to Ron what he wants Chad to do. But I hope you guys keep working on it, and I hope you'll put together this recommendation that you're talking about, and look forward to hearing more. Thank you.
I'm going to take that as you saying you're interested.
My Mary at home will forever not forgive you, but we're coming back. Thank you.
We're interested, Tim.
Bob Blake.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair and Commissioners and Directors. My name is Bob Blake. I am one of the advisors for Willapaw Bay Policy and Fisheries. I'm also the manager of the Willapaw Bay Regional Fisheries Enhancement Group. What I would like to see done is change our primary river, which 14 years on an ACL didn't produce any more fish. 4 years on the Forks Creek Hatchery, which dumps into the Willapaw, is not going to produce any more fish. We have not met our goal for natural spawners, NOSs, 4,350 adults. We have not met that since 2010, and that was 4,499 natural origin spawners. That was actually recruits, the return fish. But what I would like to see, if we could change, and I've talked to Jeremy Jordan a few times on this from NIMS. I know some of you are familiar with him. And he said there's no problem at all from NIMS if you wanted to change a primary, because the unit runs all the way from North Head on the north side of the Columbia River all the way to Cape Alava. We've got two rivers in the Grays Harbor system, the Wainuchi and the Chehalis, that's met their natural origin spawners every year for 20 years. Why in the devil are we trying to mess around with the Willapaw? We are one cycle behind now by chance transferring to Forks Creek or Willapaw as a primary. We have got the Willapaw hatchery on Forks Creek is actually in pretty good shape as far as the infrastructure. Nacelle, we're trying to get that back up and working, but we've got some funding issues. But one of the big things we're missing, and you heard these other gentlemen talk about it, is chum production. We got to maximize the chum production. If you look, I've done this. When the chum production is down, the other species are down, because chum are a good forage fish for both Chinook and Coho, as well as some steelhead. So, I mean, really, I think it needs to be looked at realistically, because it's not working in the Willapaw. We could actually maximize the Willapaw to 6 or 7 million releases on Chinook and still run maybe 10 million or 20 million chum out of the Nema hatchery, which will give us our food source for those coming back out. It is a whole cycle. And I've talked to a couple of you about this already, and I think it's something that would work. And I don't know what you would have to do to change it, but I think this is the place to start right here. So if you have any questions, please.
Mr. Graybill.
Could you clearly state which river you would have under primary designation? What is your suggestion?
Either the Wainuchi is perfect, because there's no hatchery on it, so it's all natural spawning, which dumps in between Aberdeen and Montesano, for those of you who aren't real familiar with it. And it makes sense, because it's made its escape and go every year for the last 20, 25 years, near as I can find out on the research I've done.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
Well, thank you.
Next three, Commissioner Wiesen, George Vojkovic, hope I got that right, Eric Johnson,
is a more challenging name.
I know.
I'm going to make some.
Morning, Ron.
Good morning.
Commissioner Wiesen is a Skagit County Commissioner, and as an elected official, he gets more than 3 minutes. So take it away, Ron.
Thank you very much for having us here today. We do appreciate all the work you do. I'm Skagit County Commissioner Ron Wiesen. Skagit County Commissioner voted on a resolution this last week, and I'm sure you all have it in front of you. One of the concerns that we have as a local government is making sure we keep things simple and so we can then get results on the ground. So on our resolutions here, what we're looking at is asking for increased number of permits for landowners. We want to make sure that they have an adequate supply and so they can take care of the damages happening from the elk. And we want to make sure some of the conditions that are put on those permits are reduced to make it more logical and so some of those landowners can use those permits more easily. One thing here is our county assessor came through last year looking at all the different property on our open space taxation. He had a survey gone out. We've got over $1.6 million worth of damage per year on just those properties that are in the upper Skagit River area that are in open space. Damage per year. So these property owners are paying with their damage to feed these elk. One thing, growth management, make sure that we are required to protect our ag ground, our prime ag ground. And one of the issues we're having is there we had three or four different farms that are not able to rent our land anymore because of the damage the elk have done. The commercial farmers will not come up to that area because of the damage being done. So with our growth management, we're not able to protect our ag land in that area because of the damage your elk are doing. Public safety. We've had over three sheriff vehicles wrecks. We've had our ambulance systems have to slow down and almost stop because of the elk herds coming across. We've had buses happen to stop, slam on the brakes because of the amount of elk that are going across Highway 20. I think it's a grave concern. I've said before, I'm a dairy farmer. Our animals, we had a herd get out a couple years ago, 7-8 o'clock at night. They got out on Chuckanut Drive. We had a collision, killed one of the cows, and we damaged three different vehicles and so forth. But we, as a dairy farm, we're responsible for that damage. But the elk, because they're owned by the state, nobody's responsible for it. And so it's just you drive at your own risk, and I don't think that's proper for the public to have to deal with those issues. The other thing, we have about one elk per week are killed along Highway 20 just because of the amount of animals that are going back and forth across the Highway 20. And, you know, we've all agreed that we need to discourage the elk from being on the valley floor on the private property. There are other areas up in the hills where they could go, and we want to make sure that we can help you make that happen. So one thing that we, like I said, we recommended is increase the number of damage permits per landowner, and so they can have more, you know, elk come onto my property here. I need to have the ability to make them move on. And the other thing, some of the conditions on some of those contracts with those permits are restrictive, and some of the landowners are refusing to do it because of those restrictions. So we passed the resolution. The other two commissioners weren't able to make it this morning, but I definitely would encourage you to look at this proposal. Like I said, it's very simple. We want to make it simple for the property owners and simple for Fish and Wildlife to be able to help control the elk on the valley floor. So once again, thank you very much for your time and effort. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner McKenzie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When you asked for an increase in the number of elk damage permits, I wondered if you had a number. And with regard to these collateral conditions that you don't think are necessary, could you speak more specifically as to what those are?
Talking to different property owners, there'll be some of them be able to come up here later. If, say, each property had, you know, four or five permits that they had, and so if the elk came down, then they could call some of their friends and so forth so they can have a safe hunt on their property with people, and they can point out the issues with neighbors and houses and so forth so they can be able to do those things. And then if the elk left that spot, then they could call another place that had four or five permits, and so they could deal with the elk there. The conditions, some of the property owners are reading what the conditions are, and they're saying they have to have public access to the land if they are going to get the damage permits. And so there's a discrepancy of what has to happen there, but that's what some of the damage, the property owners are telling us. And if they don't want to have other public come on their property for hunting, they're refusing to sign to get the damage permits.
Any other questions? Thank you. George? Pardon me. Mr. Holzmiller.
There again, to help Don a little bit out on this, and I don't know whether we've worked through this or not. I know lots of times when you sign, in our part of the world, when you sign one of these and take one of those permits, then you forego, that's in lieu of all future damages. So whatever a dollar of value you want to assign to an elk, that's what your settlement's going to be, is that elk that you're going to take. So if they were to come back the next day and clean out your oat field, then that's just on you for that elk. So that's probably why some of them are a little hesitant to take some of these damage permits.
And the other issue on those damage, the claims after, I think it was like $20,000 or something, and some of these are really small operations, so they're not really large commercial operations, just small places, and so they don't have that much damage to be able to hit the top maximum level, and so, you know, it just adds up, you know, here a little bit there, a little bit here, and so that's why they are reluctant to sign those damage permits to get the tags.
George?
Good morning. Thank you for having us. Appreciate that. We need you. My name's George Vojkovic. I have Skagit River Ranch in Cedro Woolley. We're certified organic, certified humane, and we sell Wagyu beef, the Japanese Colby beef, which is very expensive. Over the last several years, I've lost about $26,000 worth of cattle. Our bulls are a special breed. They're $7,000 each. I had one during the mating season, gored by an elk. And Scott Whitman, the officer that works for us up there, did come and look at it. I'm losing to hoof rot. I've lost four cows. I have a yearling at home right now that's limping that I have treated, and it didn't work. And so I've got to put it down. There's another loss. And I fed it all winter till now. So it's not just the animal. It's the input, the labor we have into it. So we have at any one time 50, 20, 30, 50 different herds come through. My neighbor put a fence up, and now all of the elk are going across my property. And they've been there the last 2 weeks. We have them about 8 months out of the year consistently on our property. After hunting season, they're pretty much nocturnal, so you don't see much, just the damage. During the rest of the year, we're fixing fence when they're in there heavy, summer and fall, virtually every day. I'm spending $2,000 to $3,000 a year on fencing, counting fencing and labor to go out every day and check the fences so our cattle don't get out. Yesterday, I filled out a paper for the Humane Treatment of Animals, and they had a questionnaire on biosecurity. I have no biosecurity. I've never had hoof rot on my property before, and now I'm inundated with it. The elk are bringing it from farm to farm to farm, and we're spreading disease amongst our domestic animals. And virtually, the elk are not domestic anymore. They don't run. They don't hide. And until we put hunting pressure on. Our hay loss is down. The elk eat all winter. They eat all summer. And when we put our cattle out, it's later in the spring because the grass has already been shortened some. And we figure we're losing $12,000 a year in feed. You know, that's almost $40,000 a year in loss. And it's getting worse. The herd is building now again. I have worked with Scott Whitman, brought hunters on the property. I endorse his plan for the coming year to make smaller pieces of the unit so we can keep the hunters on my property and local. And what's been happening in the past, those hunters are running all over. I got elk in my field, and somebody called them. They saw elk over here, elk over there. So now I think Scott's plan is going to work to keep the hunters on my property. I think that's a great plan. you know, we're small farms. We can't take hits like that. That's our retirement, our medical, and everything is all in that farm. And any hit is a great hit to us. So Scott Whitman's plan, I like it. I think that landowners, after we get our turn, need an open ticket on permits up to a limit. But certain people are having more problems than other people, and Scott has been good about that in the past. But we need more than one permit. We have to keep, after hunting season, there's a lot of pressure all over, and it is moving some of the elk out. And then what happens as soon as they're done, we're on our own. You shoot an elk the rest of the winter, the elk are on your property. Nothing to do about it. If we can keep running them back up into the hills and keep the pressure on, you know, 10 months out of the year, 8 months, whatever, when it's closed during the calving season.
George, thank you very much. We ran over time, but I...
Oh, I'm sorry. You know, I didn't know.
You were making some good points, and thank you very much for that. We got a lot of people to get through.
Excuse me.
No, thank you very much. Eric?
Thank you, Chair. Commissioners, good morning. My name is Eric Johnson. I am the Vice President of the Cedar Woolley School Board, and I am here to speak on behalf of the Cedar Woolley School District in regards to student safety and in support of the resolution recently and unanimously passed by the Skagit County Board of Commissioners requesting that this department take action to control elk intrusion and damage on the Skagit County agricultural valley floor. I have spoken several times with Phil Brockman, our superintendent, and we have engaged with our constituents and our respective counterparts in the Concrete School District, and we believe that the elk intrusion poses a real and viable safety risk to our students. Geographically, we are a very large and rural district with a sizable portion situated within the valley floor, including Lyman Elementary. Phil has ridden our bus routes and has witnessed the danger of the elk and what they impose upon our bus drivers and the students on the buses and when they are getting on and off and waiting for those buses. And by way of anecdote, our school district actually supplied the bus to bring a lot of these people down, and the school bus driver told me that within the past few weeks, she alone has had to slam on her brakes a couple times to avoid herds, causing both backpacks and students to fly forward within the bus. So Lyman Elementary in particular has an extensive grassy play area. Elk have been seen on the school grounds feeding, and kids are curious, and the elk can potentially be dangerous. I would hate to see even one student hurt by these animals. Additionally, elk are prey and attract predators such as cougars, which are also very prevalent within the area. The elk are intrusive and pose a real risk. We at the school district are acutely aware of the limited resources that the state has to spread around to address all of our problems. Therefore, we believe that by substantially increasing the number of damage prevention permits, simplifying the process for landowners to receive those tags, and then ceasing and desisting on the imposing of collateral conditions on the landowners seeking to obtain those permits, in order to achieve the objective of discouraging the elk from utilizing the East Skagit County Agricultural Valley floor, that this would be the most effective and resourceful way for going about achieving this objective. We ask that this commission take and implement these measures that have been suggested and recommended by the County Commission of Skagit County for the sake of expediting student safety. Second, only to quality education, student safety is a paramount concern to myself, Superintendent Phil Brockman, our fellow board members, and the district as a whole, and we would be personally very grateful for your support on these measures. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you, gentlemen. Next three are Michael Brondi, Eddie Hills, and Morris Robinson. Michael?
Good morning, Chair, and Commissioners. Thank you again I'm Michael Brondi. I live in Rockport in eastern Skagit County. I'm a school board member for the Concrete School District. I'm a volunteer firefighter and EMT for 40 years with the Rockport Fire Department, District 19, Skagit County. I'm an occasional substitute teacher at the Concrete School in Concrete Schools now that I'm retired from my day job. And I'm a really big proponent of the Concrete School Garden Program, which is so I'm here to speak. My wife and I also own a small farm that has been impacted by the elk in Rockport. So these introduced animals are causing a lot of problems in our community, and I would like to address the ones that they cause for the school. As Eric pointed out, there is a real safety issue. Unlike Lyman, the Lyman Elementary, Concrete has a resident herd that moves back and forth between Concrete's municipal airport and the school grounds. So our ability to garden outside on the school is being hampered. There's regular damage done to the fences. The athletic fields are scattered liberally with elk poop, which is really, you know, that's a safety issue. There's a health issue there. Like Eric mentioned, we have kids walking past herds of elk to get to the ball fields to play ball. We're very concerned about that because kids are curious and elk can be aggressive. The elk are an introduced animal, you know. They're not there. They are. When we first started living there, I logged up on the hill. There were elk living up in the mountains, and they were pretty well behaved, and they stayed out of the valley floor. The numbers of the herd have been dramatically increased by the state of Washington, and the risks associated with the elk have increased. As an emergency medical technician, we have responded to an elk motorcycle collision on Highway 530 that ultimately resulted in the motorcyclist dying. I would like to ask your help to make sure that the state truly pays for the damage. You're going to hear lots from the landowners, the school district, we're a rural and a low-income school district, 70% free and reduced lunch. We really need help repairing the damage done by the elk. We really need the kids benefit enormously from the hands-on garden time, and now our ability to garden out at the school is dramatically reduced. And we've had to cancel a track meet because the snow melted off. The elk were on the field, trashed the field. Yeah, I think you've heard, I've kind of said everything that I wanted to say, addressed all the points. I do appreciate that you do what you can to make sure that the increase in the herd is limited and that you help us as a district pay for the damages. Thank you.
Hi, Eddie.
Hi, my name is Eddie Hills. I'm the mayor of Lyman, so I'm representing the town. Lately, we've had a lot of elk in the cemetery. The cemetery is about five acres total. It buds up to an empty piece of property between the highway and the cemetery. There's about 7 acres that goes out to Highway 20. And then the school is basically to the west of that 7 acres in the cemetery just west. And so we've had a lot of elk in the cemetery, so we've had the elk scat problem. We haven't had a lot of damage, but I'm concerned that we're going to have damage in the future, and people are going to start, you know, putting out flowers and stuff like that, and it's going to, you know, people are going to spend money on that. It's going to be gone. I'm going to start getting complaints about that. The other complaint that I have is the, you know, the whole disease issue. Somebody sent me a video. A family member of mine sent me a video of a cow elk that they had reported it over a year ago, and so then I reported it. I talked to my representative Carolyn Eslick and got a hold of her and sent her the video, and I think she forwarded it to our regional director. But I mean, it was basically a three-legged animal at this point. It had been, you know, it wasn't even using one of its rear legs anymore. It was walking on three legs. So that's a concern. But and then the traffic, I mean, I hear about wrecks all the time with elk. I think there was just a recent one that I think three cars ended up hitting the darn thing. And I know at least one of the cars was totaled. So we're not only having people with property damage, we're having people with, you know, vehicle damage. The herd's out of control in my point of view. And I think more harvest permits should be given. I think more honey permits should be given. I mean, there's people that are 50 years old that have lived in Skagit County that have put in for that tag and never gotten it. So I think the number needs to be reduced drastically, and there needs to be more harvest permits for these property owners. And we don't need elk in our cemetery. I mean, we just don't need them there. So that's about all I have. I don't need to take up any more of your time, but thanks for your time.
Thanks for coming.
All right.
So, Mr. Hosemiller.
Well, I guess I'm going to address this question to both of you two, the school and the cemetery. When you call the department and say that you have elk on your area, do they respond and try and haze them off, or are you kind of on your own?
I believe in concrete at the school, we were more or less on our own. I'm sure we could get some hazing, but that'll go far.
Okay.
We have staff that chase them off and run the tractors at them, and they go a little ways.
Okay. Yeah, I've contacted more about the hoof rot than the cemetery. I thought they'd be chased out of town by now, but they seem to be making a home there. And they have the school, they have that 7 acres, they have the cemetery and park. So that's a lot of green grass for them to munch on.
Morris?
Hi, I'm Morris Robinson. We live in Day Creek, have a farm in Day Creek, which is on the south side of the Skagit River, across from Lyme and Hamilton. We've had a contract to raise potatoes for 8.5 years, and in that 8.5 years, the elk have progressively, there's become more elk consistently, and we've lost basically... we've lost the contract because of the elk. We've counted more than 90 on our property on a consistent basis. There's usually 50 at least. But what they've done is they have started to dig up the potatoes. They seem to have found that they like the potatoes. There's feces in the potatoes, so that eliminates that whole section that they've covered. So basically, we are losing upwards of $4,200 to $4,500 a year from this contract that we've lost. So basically, there's been enough studies done, and I think now it's time, let's get some action. Let's give us more kill permits. Last year or this year, I understand that there might have been 100 killed, but yet there's still 300 calves. They're going to have cows that are going to have calves, so it's just going up geometrically. We're not getting ahead as far as property damage. Our farm isn't big enough to be able to apply for the $10,000 or $20,000 in damage. So if we get more kill permits, that's going to help alleviate that. And I appreciate your time and interest.
Thank you, gentlemen. Next three, Brian Lipscomb, Val Molin, and Randy Good.
Go ahead.
Good morning. I'm Brian Lipscomb. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm from Cedar Woolley, Washington. I don't hunt. That may have to change here soon. I don't fish. I don't eat salmon, and I do not promote the killing of salmon. We do have properties along the Skagit River, and I'm familiar with and I participate in habitat restoration. Fish and Wildlife is very big on eradicating invasive species from riparian habitats. So elk are not native to our area. They are invading and damaging private property. They are spreading disease. They are causing serious injuries to the public at large, and they are proliferating at an alarming rate. So why aren't these elk classified as an invasive species? If they were a plant, they would be. The elk are clearly a visible problem, although they are really a symptom of a much larger issue, that of government overreach. Does anyone here really believe that the citizens harmed by these unwanted elk intrusions could not solve the problem on their own at very little cost? Ignoring existing law and allowing what could be considered an at-large elk petting zoo to habitually damage productive and necessary farmland needs to stop. It is unjust that those who make and influence decisions that impact the quiet enjoyment of a citizen's real property do not share in the harmful consequences of their actions or inactions. The elk were introduced in the area for the sole purpose of hunting. They are not pets that the rural population keeps for the benefit of those taking a scenic Sunday drive. They are negatively impacting large and small landowners alike. We're on the south side of the Skagit River and have witnessed elk on our properties for the last few years. We had two areas of sweet corn planted last season. About 2 weeks before harvest, elk ate and trampled 3/4 of the corn in one of these areas. And they just eat the tops. They don't eat the whole, they don't finish their plates. We, as the Honorable Judge Virch has stated in a ruling, quote, one of our most important rights for a citizen is the right to be left alone. Please do all you can to ensure that elk leave alone rural property owners, or at the very least allow these citizens relief to protect their own property. The most important asset government has is the trust of their people. When we lose that, what do we have? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Good?
Yes, my name is Randy Good from Hamilton. Representing Skagit County Cattlemen's and the Friends of Skagit County here today. I have helped organize tours for Brad, the director, and Amy, and the 39th District legislators, showing them the damages that the elk have caused in Skagit County. I supported Senator Wagner's legislation for elk, the elk fence pilot project. I was neutral on two bills and testified providing workable ideas that would work in Skagit County since the Skagit has its own unique environment. After 10 years of elk intrusion damages, DFW staff finally recommends the need to have a non-ag citizens become involved in the elk issue per the February 22nd DFW Skagit Elk Update report. Hopefully these non-ag homeowners, schools, and others will be rightfully compensated for their personal and private property losses. Besides the huge losses to agriculture, between 800 and 1,000 homes have suffered elk intrusion-related damages, estimated to be over $1,000 per home per year. Two school districts are facing huge damages, as you just heard. EMS vehicles are being stopped en route to emergencies. The update on the county assessor's intrusion damages survey that Commissioner Wiesen mentioned, an update to that, 96 home farms have enrolled in the Farm Open Space Program, which is 75% of the eastern Skagit County is affected with. Assessor estimates damages will reach the 1.6. Keep in mind that the survey does not include farms not enrolled in the open space, homeowners damages, damages at schools, and highway and vehicle collisions. Next item. DFW needs to revamp the damage compensation plan. The DFW Commission is the citizen's representative to the DFW. Commission members, please develop and implement a fair, equitable process now to pay compensation for the state's elk, which are causing all these damages you're hearing about today. As part of the WSU $3 million grant to research the elk hoof rot issue, there was a focus group in Mount Vernon. A veterinarian described how easily transmitted and the seriousness of the elk hoof rot disease. And to hear now, 1.5 years after the legislation was approved, WSU is just now building pens to hold these elk for testing. A quote from WSU report states, quote, as a general practice, separation of wild and domestic animals is prudent as a preventative measure to reduce the risk of any disease spread, end quote. As a farmer, we are appalled at DFW's complete disregard of their elk transmitting this deadly disease to our agricultural land, our livestock, and even to the elk themselves. The director's report for today states health staff focused on a few resident subgroups for targeted hazing and hunting. Hazing has never worked, only causes more damages to new locations. And closing up, it's extremely important, commission members, to review my email that I sent Tuesday. Documentation there showed the truth on the history of the elk being imported into the Skagit Valley by the Washington State Game Department. Pictures were also there showing damages to agriculture, schools, homeowners, and elk vehicle collisions, and the hoof rot report from WSU. I encourage you to support the county's resolution presented to you. Thank you.
Mr. Director, Mr. Chairman, committee, thank you for having me today. My name is Val Mullen. My family owns a small farm in Lyman. We have experienced elk damage on the farm for a number of years. They would kill our small trees, damage the grass and the pasture. So at our own expense, about 10 years ago, we put up a 10 or 11 wire electrical fence to keep them out, and it has been pretty effective. But even though we put the fence up this winter, we still have damage because they get scared for various reasons. They have damaged the fence several times, requiring a number of days for us to repair that fence. They've killed a number of our small Christmas trees. They've trampled the pasture. We've been seeing 20 or 30 elk about every day around our area, and we've seen blood in some of the tracks as well. In 2013 and 2014, my family felt compelled to participate in the Elk Damage Committee meetings in Cedro Woolley. We attended these for months. I took notes for the Damage Committee. We came up with a set of guidelines and recommendations after months of those meetings. We were promised our work was going to be included and would be obvious in the new elk plan, but that turned out to be a pretty empty promise. Very little, if none, of our work was included in the plan, and it felt like our work was kind of a waste of time. The measures that were implemented in that new elk plan 5 years ago included hazing, fencing, new signs along the highway, lights, damage hunting permits. Those same measures are being considered today. Unfortunately, those measures don't seem to be working, as we have more elk in the valley floor than ever before. It is our family's opinion that the DFW does not really understand elk ecology and do not know how to handle the elk appropriately. The measures that they have used are a stab in the dark. It's a very complicated issue that requires some real scientific study. Ecology is an important part of this, so just throwing money at the problem does not seem to be working, and we would, and our family encourages a different approach. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the last two, and then I think we'll probably have a comment or two. Bill Schmidt and Joseph Durham.
Good morning. Whoa. I needed this at 3 a.m. when I got up. And just to clarify, we weren't on the little bus, we were on the big bus. I want to just share with you a little bit the time and composition of some of the audience. We have commissioners, mayors, landowners, farmers, EMT people, all this. You got to help us. I've been here several times, and I'm afraid Fish and Wildlife gets an F on their report card. The herd is increasing every year. Damage is increasing every year. And some of the merits of the evaluation is the number of complaints. That's a bogus thing to base most of your management on. You guys represent us. You guys have a lot of authority. We're asking for your help. We want your help. I'd like to see an action plan with some things being imposed with a timeline. That's what you do in the military. I'm a Vietnam veteran. That's what you should be doing here. This is like an attack on our farms, and we need a plan. We need a plan that is measurable and a plan that can be implemented and something that we can grade you on. So I really ask for your help. You have the authority to do it. And I just want to make a few minor points. The $1.6 million that the assessor has per year for damages, once again, that's only the ag producers that are doing that. It's not all the small landowners and all the other problems, and it doesn't cover the school. I also think it's outrageous that a school that has a budgetary problem has to maybe spend $20,000, $30,000 with football turf and cyclone fencing and all that. So maybe another thought for Joe or Kelly is to have a discretionary fund that you don't have to go through a compensation program. You have a discretionary fund, you call somebody up, you verify the elk damage, you write a check to the school for $20,000 or whatever. You do something to help these communities so they don't have major problems. You go over to George's place, you see his bull gored, maybe you give him a $7,000 check for a new bull. You would get a lot of praise from the public and you would save our farms. We've lost three or four farms in the valley because they can't put up with the damage with the elk. We want to save our farms. We want to save our rural character. You got to help us. The other thing is, if you have better management, you need less compensation. So let's do something with the management so we don't have to talk about money. We don't have to talk about overpasses. We don't have to talk about fencing. We don't have to talk about subgroups. We are the agricultural floor. If you look at the North Cascade Management Plan, we are one half of 1% of the herd's area. Keep them out of that small area. Before, we hunted them. We kept pressure on them. Now we have the co-managers commingling and messing things up. They're putting pressure on them year-round in the hills, driving them down on us. We used to hunt them in the valley. It's a special permit now. It's not open, so there's no pressure to keep them to run out of the valley back up on the hills. Think about what you're doing. Ask us questions. Work with us. Let's get something done on the ground. Let's not have any more lives, any more children hurt, the airport, plane crash, any of this stuff. Please realize the importance of this. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Joe?
Good morning, Commissioner. My name is Joe Durham. I'm Aberdeen, Washington. I'd like to thank the commission, the director, and staff for allowing me to speak this morning on some concerns that I have. First one would be the Wyandotte mitigation. I'm not here to talk about elk. I'm here to talk about the Wyandotte mitigation. It's been 25 years plus since Tacoma Public Utility started producing power at the Wyandotte Dam, and zero movement to start work to meet the mitigation obligations. If I recall correctly, for the past 7 or 8 or 9 years, the numbers have gone away, we, the public citizens, have made comments at the commission meeting in February of each year, and WDF Commission has given direction to the WDF and W director and past directors to get to work, get the work completed, and get down to getting it done. It appears that past directors and staff have denied the direction put forth by the commission from all those other meetings. We, the three branches working on the Wyandotte mitigation, have little faith in the staff that has had the responsibility to move forward on the mitigation. And I particularly feel that some of the people on the staff should be replaced, and those that would have interest in it take coal and get the obligation done. The staff, starting with the AD of Fisheries, through the Region 6 Fish Program Managers, to the Region 6 Fish Technical Committee, some of those people should be replaced. I have reread some of the documents that I finally struck to me that the entire hold on the mitigation has been and is the WDF&W. The document that I presented to the commission a few years back is in a stack of information that I presented. That is the document. That document is the particular one I'm referring to. That document right there. Wyandotte Lake Project, transfer title fee to the City of Aberdeen and flood control root curve, revision Grays Harbor County, Washington, draft environmental assessment, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Seattle District, 1992. Within the particular document, we find that the entire hatchery issue is an agreement between the cities of Aberdeen,
Tacoma, Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, the Quinault Nation, and the Confederated Tribes. The hatchet falls in the hands of the agencies. These are the agencies. Since the Army Corps of Engineers previously mitigated for the loss of the spawning habitat within the entire reservation, the money was there for the hatchery. So I stand today making a statement that the Washington Department of Washington Wildlife Commission, the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife have failed the public, the tribes, the recreational fishermen, the commercial fisheries within the Chehalis Basin by not fulfilling their obligations to complete all requirements to meet the mitigation hydropower at the dam. Shame on all those who were involved in the past. My final one is on the Columbia River, but just a very short statement. Columbia River gillnets. If any recovery to weak Columbia River stocks have any possible chance of recovery, Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife must reverse their decision to allow gillnet fisheries in the main stem Columbia River and insist that Oregon do the same. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
I want to take a minute and speak to the folks that came down from the county that I live in. I'll be spirit of full disclosure. I live in Mount Vernon. And I'm very, very sensitive to the elk problems. I've heard it before. I have worked on it. I've had a dialogue with a number of staff, including the director, recently. And I'm only speaking for myself. My colleagues can speak for themselves if they feel they want to. We have a limited amount of tools in our toolbox, so we don't have a magic wand that we can wave to immediately fix the elk issue. But This concern for safety and damage to schools and cars and the sheriff's department and any injuries and the man's bow getting gored, that resonates with me. And I can assure you that from where I sit, I'm going to engage as aggressively as I can. I'd like to see the situation improved quickly. And I'm available. Anybody wants to call me? Thank you.
You want to say something?
Yeah. I'm the next door neighbor, I guess, up there. But I've had the opportunity twice to visit and take a tour with Randy and John and Bill, and it's an issue that I feel very strongly about too. Commissioner Carpenter and I talk a lot about it. We've talked a lot to the director about it and the previous director. It's a very frustrating issue for us because if we could just make a decision today, we would do it. We live in a world of co-management, and right, wrong, whatever, that's the world that we have to operate within. It's very challenging at times, and it's very frustrating at times, and very rewarding when all works well. But I too am available. You have our ears. I know you have all of our ears, and especially for the neighbor and the other one and the homeowner, neighbor, yeah. Home, whatever. Yeah. We're here to help, and we appreciate you guys coming down all today. I think your testimony collectively was well stated, concise, and appropriate. We hear you. We need to continue to hear you, but we are here to help. I know sometimes it's not as quickly as we would like, but on many issues that we face throughout this state, if we could wave the wand up here, we would do it. We simply do not have that authority. So we do have to work together, and that can be frustrating, but also rewarding.
Commissioner McKay.
Co-management of elk, if you're introduced, don't you have the authority to accept or decline any of the co-management and use your own logic for public safety?
No, I'm not going to entertain the question.
We can talk about it off the record, Bill. It's not something we can deal with right now. Commissioner McKay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And let me also echo the thanks to the people that came down to testify. As you have in part in January, and as you did about a year ago. And so This is not an agenda item for the commission to make a motion or make any decision. That would be out of order. But I think when we get to agenda item number 27, which is a meeting debrief, that maybe we ought to have some discussion about whether or not the commission should take a heavier role as a body in all of this. It is very compelling testimony to hear that the county commissioners have taken the trouble to sign a resolution, that we've got mayors, we've got school board representatives, we've got school district representatives. We've got testimony about elk in cemeteries and in school boards and digging up potatoes. And so when I look at our elk management plan here that was recently adopted, I get the feeling that it's just not working so well. There may be some other folks out there who disagree with that, and that's why it would be inappropriate for a motion to come forward here from this body now. But at some point, I think, at least from my commissioner's seat, I would like to have the department have a good image in Skagit County about this elk issue by everybody, including the ones that aren't in the room who might disagree. But for a large segment here, it's not working too well, apparently. And so I'm hearing that as well. That's what we've heard here. And so what to do about it? So in January, we talked about putting a little more teeth into the plan and coming up with some sort of tangible quantitative objectives that a year from now could be, well, then it was in January, could be measured. We've got specific recommendations here to increase the number of permits, terms of permits. And so I think that it would be appropriate for there to be a thorough discussion about what to do about this. I know we've got a crowded agenda here for now, but if not here, maybe after some more thought we could hear from our director on a conference call or something. But I'll just say from my seat here, to have this many people spend this amount of time with these specific examples that really say it's not working, that this commission does have an obligation to have some response to that beyond what has been happening so far, from my seat anyway.
Anyone else? Mr. Rosemiller.
And I'm not your neighbor. I couldn't be any further geographically away from your part of the world, but I'm in your business, so I thoroughly understand. And John and I have talked ad nauseum about this, that there again, when we start talking damage control permits and stuff like that, we need to make them workable. Because in reality, they all sound really good. Well, why don't you take that? Well, because there again, then I forego all future damages. There's lots of opportunities. And there again, we're busy guys. Anybody that's in agriculture, you have full days. And to say, okay, you get to go shoot an elk and that should compensate you. Nah, I got enough stuff going. I don't need to mess with a damn elk. That being said, it would give some guys an opportunity. There's opportunities for them to give the elk to food banks, give the elk to whomever, and hunters coming in, that sounds all well and good, but before long you have Elmer Fudd out there, and they're having a lot of fun and going around, but when you truly have the elk there, they're someplace else going to a kid's baseball game or some damn thing like that, and we had cow hunts on our place, and unless you literally take them by the hand and take them out there because they want to drive around the roads, well, elk probably isn't going to be standing in the road. You can't shoot it from the road anyway. So we've got to work with these guys one way or the other. Give them some flexibilities because, you know, there again, the damage control permits, as long as they're structured right, are a good thing. But we got to watch the devil in detail. So thank you, guys. I'm sorry. I've tried. I beat this drum as hard as I can. I wish we could have got some better answers quicker. But at least you guys keep showing up. Hopefully, sooner or later, we can crack this nut.
Thank you, Commissioner. In closing on the elk issue, I want to thank all of you for coming down. It's quite a trip. I do it pretty regular, so I appreciate it. And Saturday's a little better than the weekday, I'll tell you that. But Commissioner Wiesen, I want to reach out to you and your colleagues, Commissioner Janicki and Commissioner Dahlstedt. The director and I talked yesterday. We're going to try and set up a time to meet with you as a small group and talk about this. Most of us, the director and staff, and are leaving Tuesday to go to California to get the fishing seasons finalized for 2019. But when we get back, I'd like to get a hold of you and your colleagues and see about a time that would work, spend an hour or two and see what we could create in the spirit of a better future for the citizens in the agricultural side. So thank you for that. Mr. Baker?
On elk, I'd just like to say that I agree with my colleagues. We've heard you. It's going to be interesting to see what comes out of this meeting, but I guarantee you something will. But what I wanted to note is that it seems like every meeting we have, there are serious problems that are presented to us, and sometimes there are complaints about staff of the agency. I wanted to reiterate that this agency is it is the only one that I know of in this state where regularly, once a month or so, people who have complaints and issues and problems can talk to all of us, and importantly, talk to the director and deputy director of the agency. I've been around government a long time. I've never seen that amount of accessibility to people who have things to say. From the commission standpoint, at least me on the commission, we are volunteers. There's eight of us. We do not manage the staff. We manage two people. We manage the director, and we manage Tammy. And speaking for myself, my default is to have 100% confidence in what staff tells us. If there are problems with what they tell us, those need to be directed to the director, in my opinion, and they need to be fairly specific with respect to what the problem is. So I wanted to say something in defense of our staff, because I've heard this for a couple of years now, and what I see in our staff is a whole bunch of people who went to school for a long time and are doing the very best they can, giving these really complicated issues. So I just wanted to make it clear, yeah, we have staff problems just like any other agency, but I don't think it's this group's responsibility to try to deal with those. I think that responsibility rests at the end of the table. So thank you.
Okay. Any other comments or questions? That brings to close the open public